Welcome to our deep dive into the world of the early Christians. You brought us some pretty intriguing verses from 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians, letters from Paul to the church in Thessalonica. Imagine a community facing persecution and uncertainty about the future. That's what we're stepping into today, exploring messages of faith, community, and hope that still resonate centuries later.
It's fascinating to consider that these letters offer us a glimpse into the challenges and triumphs of a fledgling faith. The Thessalonians, a newly formed community, were grappling with everything from social pressures to anxieties about the end of the world.
So we're not just talking about ancient history here, right? These letters are like a window into human experiences that are still very much alive today.
Absolutely. Take, for example, the theme of standing firm in faith. We see this vividly in 1 Thessalonians 1:2-4, where Paul commends the Thessalonians for their unwavering belief, their love, and their endurance, particularly in the face of trials.
He even calls them chosen by God. I imagine that was a powerful affirmation for them, especially when they were feeling so vulnerable.
It's crucial to understand that this concept of being chosen wasn't about exclusivity or privilege. It was about recognizing that their faith was a gift, a source of strength and resilience in a world that often felt hostile.
So it was more about purpose than about being part of some elite group.
Precisely, their faith was a call to action, a way of aligning their lives with God's purpose for them. This is where the concept of sanctification comes into play, a term that might sound a bit archaic today, but was absolutely central to their understanding of what it meant to be a Christian.
I have to admit, sanctification isn't exactly a word I use every day. Could you unpack that a bit for us?
Of course, in essence, sanctification is about becoming more Christ-like, about aligning your life with God's will. It's a process of transformation, of turning away from sin and embracing a life of holiness. And for the Thessalonians, this wasn't just an abstract theological idea. It had very real practical implications for how they lived their lives.
Okay, so let's get specific here. What did this idea of sanctification actually look like in their daily lives? Did it affect their relationships, their work, their social interactions?
That's a great question. One example we see in 1 Thessalonians 4:4-5 is Paul's exhortation to live lives of purity and self-control, particularly in the area of sexual conduct. This was in direct contrast to the prevailing culture of the Roman Empire, which was known for its permissiveness.
So they were being called to live counterculturally, to embody a different set of values.
Yes, and this wasn't just about following rules. It was about understanding that their bodies were temples of the Holy Spirit, that their physical actions had spiritual significance. This is where that intriguing reference to the body as a vessel comes in. It highlights the interconnectedness of their physical and spiritual lives.
Wow, that's a powerful image.
Yeah.
It makes you think about how we treat our bodies today and how that might reflect our values and priorities.
It's also interesting to consider how this emphasis on purity might have impacted their relationships within the community. It likely created a sense of accountability, a shared commitment to upholding certain standards of behavior.
So it wasn't just about individual piety, but about shaping a community that reflected these values.
Exactly. And this commitment to purity wasn't just about avoiding certain behaviors. It was also about cultivating virtues like self-control, discipline, and respect for oneself and others. These were qualities that would have been essential for their survival as a marginalized and often persecuted community.
It sounds like they were being called to live differently, not just in terms of their personal choices, but in terms of how they related to each other and to the world around them.
Precisely. And this call to live differently was intimately connected to their understanding of the future, particularly their beliefs about the second coming of Christ.
Right. We can't forget about their anxieties about the end of the world. Remember that dramatic description in 1 Thessalonians 4:16? The shout, the archangel, the trumpet blast. I mean, that's some serious imagery.
Imagine hearing that for the first time. It would have been both exhilarating and terrifying. But it's important to understand that this belief in the second coming wasn't just about escaping the world. It was about believing in a future transformed by God's grace, a world made new.
So it wasn't just about running away from the bad stuff, but about running towards something better.
Exactly. And this hope for the future had a profound impact on their present lives. It gave them a sense of purpose, a reason to persevere even in the face of hardship. It also created a sense of urgency, a desire to live in a way that reflected their belief in the coming kingdom.
So this belief in the second coming wasn't just a passive waiting game, but a call to action.
Precisely. It was about aligning their lives with the values of the kingdom they believed was coming. And this is where those themes of sanctification and holy living come full circle. They weren't just trying to be good people. They were preparing themselves for a future reality, a world where God's will would be fully realized.
That's fascinating. So their understanding of the end times wasn't just about escaping this world, but about transforming it, about living in a way that reflected the world they hoped to see.
Exactly. And this perspective would have been incredibly empowering. It would have given them the courage to resist the pressures of the Roman culture, to stand up for their beliefs, and to build a community that embodied the values of the kingdom they longed for.
It sounds like a very different way of thinking about the future than we often do today. We tend to focus on individual success, on achieving our goals, on making our mark on the world. But the Thessalonians seem to have had a much broader perspective, one that encompassed the well-being of their community and the ultimate hope of a world transformed by God's grace.
That's a really insightful observation, and it raises an important question for us to consider. How does our understanding of the future, or lack thereof, shape our lives today? Are we living with a sense of purpose, with a hope that transcends our individual aspirations? Or are we caught up in the anxieties and distractions of the present moment?
Those are some big questions, and I think they get to the heart of why these ancient letters are still so relevant today. They challenge us to think differently about our lives, about our priorities, and about the kind of world we want to create.
And they remind us that even in the midst of uncertainty and hardship, there's a hope that can sustain us, a purpose that can give us direction, and a community that can offer us support.
So we've explored the themes of standing firm in faith, the call to sanctification, and the impact of their beliefs about the second coming. What other threads can we unravel from these letters? What other insights can we gain into the lives of these early Christians?
Well, one aspect that we can't overlook is the emphasis on community. Remember that beautiful call to action in 1 Thessalonians 5.14, warn the unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. That passage really captures the essence of their shared life together.
It sounds like they weren't just individuals clinging to their beliefs, but a tightly knit group, actively invested in each other's well-being. But we'll have to save that explanation for the next part of our deep dive. Welcome back to our deep dive into 1 and 2 Thessalonians. When we left off, we were starting to unpack this idea of community being central to the Thessalonians' experience.
It's truly remarkable how Paul emphasizes the importance of mutual support and encouragement within the Christian community. This wasn't just about warm, fuzzy feelings. Their faith was forged in the midst of hardship and persecution, so they needed each other to stay strong.
So it's a matter of survival, almost. Like a spiritual support system in a hostile world.
Absolutely. And we see this in practical terms in verses like 2 Thessalonians 3.14, where Paul instructs them to distance themselves from those who are not living in accordance with the teachings. It might seem harsh at first glance, but it reflects a deep commitment to holding each other accountable and maintaining the integrity of their community.
That's really interesting. It wasn't just about accepting everyone unconditionally. There were expectations and standards for how members of the community were to behave.
And those standards weren't arbitrary. They flowed directly from their understanding of what it meant to follow Christ, to embody his teachings in their daily lives. And they understood that maintaining those standards was essential for the health and well-being of the community as a whole.
It's like they were creating a space where they could support and challenge each other to live out their faith in a very real and tangible way.
Precisely. And it wasn't just about correcting wrong behavior. It was also about actively encouraging and uplifting one another. Remember that passage in 1 Thessalonians 5.11 where Paul urges them to encourage one another and build each other up? This speaks to a deep understanding of the power of positive reinforcement, of speaking words of affirmation and hope into each other's lives.
It seems like they recognized that words have power, that they can either tear down or build up. And in a world where they were constantly facing opposition and negativity, those words of encouragement would have been like a lifeline.
Absolutely. And this emphasis on encouragement wasn't limited to words. It also manifested in acts of practical support. Remember how Paul expresses concern for their well-being in 1 Thessalonians 3.5, even sending Timothy to check on them and strengthen their faith? This demonstrates a genuine care and concern that went beyond mere words.
It's like they were a family looking out for each other, supporting each other through thick and thin. But families aren't always perfect, right? There are disagreements, conflicts, even betrayals sometimes. Did the Thessalonians experience any of that?
Of course. They were human just like us. They had their flaws and struggles. We even see hints of internal conflict in passages like 2 Thessalonians 3.6, where Paul addresses those who are idle and disruptive, refusing to work and causing trouble within the community.
So they weren't immune to the challenges that come with living in community. But it seems like they had a framework for addressing those challenges, for holding each other accountable without tearing each other apart.
And that framework was rooted in their shared faith. Their commitment to following Christ's example of love and forgiveness. This doesn't mean they condoned bad behavior, but it does suggest that they approached conflict with a spirit of grace and a desire for reconciliation.
It's really inspiring to think about this group of people facing so much external pressure, yet still striving to create a space of love and support for each other.
And that commitment to community wasn't just about their own internal well-being. It was also about being a light to the world around them. Remember how Paul commends their faith for becoming an example to all the believers in Macedonia and Achaia in 1 Thessalonians 1.7.
So their way of life, their commitment to each other, was actually having a ripple effect, inspiring others who were also struggling to follow Christ in a hostile world.
Exactly. They were demonstrating that it was possible to live differently, to create a community that embodied the values of the kingdom they longed for, even in the midst of a culture that often seemed opposed to everything they stood for.
It's a powerful reminder that even small, seemingly insignificant communities can have a profound impact on the world around them. But how did they maintain that level of commitment, especially in the face of persecution and hardship? What was their secret?
Well, I think one key factor was their unwavering hope in the future, their belief that God had a plan for them, a plan that extended beyond their present circumstances. This hope wasn't just a pie-in-the-sky dream. It was grounded in that understanding of God's character and his promises as revealed in Scripture.
So it wasn't just blind faith, but a faith rooted in a deep understanding of who God is and what he has done.
Precisely. And that understanding fueled their perseverance. Remember how Paul praises their work produced by faith, your labor prompted by love, and your endurance inspired by hope in our Lord Jesus Christ in 1 Thessalonians 1.3. These weren't just empty words. They were living proof of the power of hope to transform lives.
It seemed like that hope was more than just a feeling. It was a driving force motivating them to act, to love, to endure, even when things are tough.
And that hope wasn't just about escaping this world. It was about being part of something much bigger, something that transcended their individual lives and connected them to a purpose that gave their lives meaning. Remember how Paul describes them as waiting for his son from heaven, whom he raised from the dead, Jesus, who rescues us from the coming wrath in 1 Thessalonians 1.10.
So their hope was grounded in this belief that God was working in history, that he was ultimately in control, and that he would one day make all things right.
Exactly. And that belief gave them the strength to face the challenges of their present reality, knowing that their suffering was not in vain, that it was part of a larger story that was ultimately moving towards redemption.
It's amazing to think about how this small, seemingly insignificant community facing persecution and hardship could hold on to such a powerful vision of the future. But it wasn't just about the future, was it? They also had a deep appreciation for the present moment, for the simple joys of life, for the gift of being alive.
That's a great observation. And that brings us to another key theme that runs throughout these letters, the theme of gratitude. Remember that simple yet profound instruction in 1 Thessalonians 5.1e to give thanks in all circumstances.
It's a challenging instruction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially when you're facing difficult circumstances. How did the Thessalonians manage to cultivate a spirit of gratitude in the midst of their trials?
Well, I think it starts with recognizing that gratitude isn't just about feeling happy or content with your circumstances. It's about acknowledging the goodness of God even when things are tough. It's about choosing to focus on what you have rather than what you lack.
So it's more about a shift in perspective than about denying the reality of your situation.
Exactly. And that shift in perspective can have a profound impact on your experience. When you choose to focus on the good, even in the midst of hardship, you open yourself up to a sense of joy and peace that transcends your circumstances.
It's like that saying, gratitude turns what we have into enough. But it's not always easy to do, is it? Especially when we're bombarded with messages that tell us we need more, more, more. How did the Thessalonians manage to resist those messages and cultivate a genuine sense of contentment?
Well, I think it helps that they were part of a community that reinforced those values. Remember how Paul constantly expresses gratitude for them in his letters? He thanks God for their faith, their love, their perseverance. He reminds them of all the good things they have received through Christ.
So it was like they were constantly reminding each other the reasons they had to be thankful, even when things were tough.
And that constant reinforcement would have been crucial for maintaining a spirit of gratitude over time. It's easy to slip into negativity and complaining when we're surrounded by people who are doing the same. But when we're part of a community that actively practices gratitude, it becomes much easier to cultivate that attitude in our own lives.
It's like they were creating a culture of gratitude. A space where thankfulness was the norm rather than the exception. But gratitude wasn't just about feeling good, was it? It also had a profound impact on their relationship with God.
Absolutely. Remember how Paul encourages them to pray without ceasing in 1 Thessalonians 5:1? This suggests that gratitude was woven into the very fabric of their relationship with God. It wasn't just about asking for things. It was about acknowledging his goodness, his faithfulness, his love in every situation.
So prayer wasn't just about getting what they wanted, but about connecting with God on a deeper level, expressing their love and appreciation for who he is and what he has done.
Precisely. And that kind of prayer would have naturally flowed from a heart filled with gratitude. When you're constantly aware of God's blessings in your life, it becomes much easier to approach him with a spirit of humility, trust, and thankfulness.
It's like gratitude opens up a channel of communication with God, a channel that's free from demands and expectations, a channel that's simply about expressing love and appreciation.
And that kind of communication would have been essential for sustaining their faith in the midst of hardship. When you're facing trials and difficulties, it's easy to question God's goodness, to wonder if he's really there for you. But when you have a foundation of gratitude, it becomes much easier to trust that he's working everything together for your good, even when you don't understand what he's doing.
So gratitude wasn't just a nice feeling. It was a spiritual discipline, a way of strengthening their faith and deepening their relationship with God.
And it was also a way of preparing themselves for the future, for the day of the Lord that they believed was coming. Remember how we talked about the importance of sanctification, of living a holy life? Well, gratitude was an essential part of that process. It was about aligning their hearts and minds with God's will, about cultivating an attitude of thankfulness that reflected the reality of his goodness and grace.
So gratitude wasn't just about the past or the present. It was also about shaping their future, about preparing themselves for the ultimate fulfillment of God's promises. But we'll have to save that exploration for the next part of our deep dive. Welcome back to our deep dives into the letters to the Thessalonians. We've been uncovering how this early Christian community navigated their faith, their relationships, and their understanding of what was to come. And speaking of what was to come, I think it's time we tackled that big question looming over everything, the day of the Lord.
You're absolutely right. This concept was central to the Thessalonians' worldview, shaping their understanding of their present reality and their hopes for the future. It's a complex idea with deep roots in the Hebrew scriptures, but for them, it essentially signified God's ultimate intervention in history, a time of both judgment and renewal.
I can imagine it must have felt like a double-edged sword, both exciting and terrifying at the same time. On the one hand, they were looking forward to the return of Christ, the resurrection of the dead, the triumph of good over evil. But on the other hand, there was this sense of impending judgment, a reckoning for those who had rejected God.
Precisely. And this tension between hope and fear, anticipation and anxiety is woven throughout these letters. Remember how some Thessalonians were so convinced that the day of the Lord was imminent that they had stopped working and were causing disruption in the community.
Right. That's where Paul steps in with some much needed guidance in 2 Thessalonians 2:2, urging them not to be swayed by rumors or false prophecies about the timing of Christ's return.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like he's saying, hey, I know you're eager for the grand finale, but don't neglect the present moment.
Exactly. He's reminding them that while the future is important, they can't let it paralyze them in the present. There's still work to be done, a life to be lived in a way that honors God and reflects their faith.
So it wasn't about passively waiting for the sky to fall, but about actively living out their faith in the here and now.
Absolutely. And this is where their understanding of the day of the Lord gets really interesting. For them, it wasn't just about escaping this world and going to heaven. It was about the renewal of all creation, the establishment of God's kingdom on earth. And they believe that their actions in the present were directly connected to that future reality.
So it wasn't just about saving their own souls, but about participating in God's plan to transform the world.
Exactly. And that's why their beliefs about the day of the Lord were so intimately connected to their everyday lives. It wasn't just an abstract theological concept. It was a driving force that shaped their priorities, their relationships, and their understanding of what it meant to be a follower of Christ.
It makes you wonder how this understanding of the future might have influenced their interactions with the world around them. Did they withdraw from society and just focus on their own little community, or did they engage with the culture trying to make a difference in the here and now?
That's a fascinating question. And while the letters don't give us a complete picture, there are hints that they were actively engaged in the world, even while holding on to their distinct identity as followers of Christ. Remember how Paul urges them to live quiet lives and mind your own affairs in 1 Thessalonians 4:11. This suggests that they were not seeking to overthrow the Roman government or disrupt social order. But at the same time, their very existence as a community that worshipped a crucified Messiah was a challenge to the prevailing power structures.
So it was more about living counterculturally than about actively rebelling against the status quo.
Precisely, they understood that their primary allegiance was to God's kingdom, not to the Roman Empire, and that allegiance shaped their values, their priorities, and their way of life.
It's remarkable to think about how this small group of people facing persecution and marginalization could hold on to such a powerful vision of a different future. But it wasn't just about wishful thinking, was it? They believed that this future was rooted in the reality of God's power and love as demonstrated in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus.
Absolutely, and that belief gave them the courage to face the challenges of their present reality, knowing that their suffering was not in vain, that it was part of a larger story that was ultimately moving towards redemption.
So their hope wasn't just about escaping this world, it was about participating in God's plan to transform it, to bring about a new creation where justice, peace, and love would reign supreme.
And that vision wasn't just for the distant future. They believed that the kingdom of God was already breaking into the present through their lives, their community, and their witness to the world.
So it was like they were living in this constant tension between the already and the not yet. The kingdom was already present in their midst, but its full realization was still to come.
Mm-hmm.
And that tension fueled their actions, their hope, and their perseverance.
Exactly. And that same tension exists for us today, doesn't it? We live in a world that is both beautiful and broken, filled with both hope and despair. And as followers of Christ, we're called to be agents of healing and transformation, working towards a future where God's love reigns supreme, even as we acknowledge that the journey won't be easy.
It's a humbling realization, but also incredibly empowering, knowing that we're part of something bigger than ourselves, something that transcends time and space, can give us the courage to face even the most daunting challenges.
And that's the legacy of the Thessalonians, isn't it? They remind us that even in the face of uncertainty and persecution, we can choose to live with hope, to love fiercely, and to build communities that reflect the values of the kingdom we long for.
So as we emerge from this deep dive, what's the one thing you hope stays with our listener?
I hope they walk away with a renewed sense of the power and relevance of these ancient letters. The Thessalonians weren't just passive recipients of Paul's teachings. They were active participants wrestling with complex questions, facing real challenges, and ultimately shaping their faith in a way that continues to inspire us today.
It's a reminder that faith isn't a static set of beliefs, but a dynamic, evolving relationship with God and with each other. And that journey like theirs is filled with both joys and struggles, triumphs and setbacks. But ultimately, it's a journey worth taking, because it leads us towards something greater than ourselves, something that can truly transform our lives and the world around us.
And as you continue your own journey, remember the Thessalonians, remember their resilience, their hope, their unwavering commitment to each other, and may their story inspire you to live boldly, love deeply, and embrace the adventure of faith with open hearts and courageous spirits.